Blog Talk Radio.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her baby on the roof, her beauty and the moonlight overthrew ya. She tied you to her kitchen chair, she broke your throne, and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. This is your host, Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friend and co-host, Crystalline Beek Larson. Hi, Crystalline.
Hi, Paula. Good morning.
Good morning.
And happy Mother's Day a day early.
Well, you know, it's thank you. I always think about, and you too, because I know that you are a stepmom, and stepmoms are very special people too. Motherhood is a very special thing, isn't it? And we've decided to dedicate this show to motherhood, a tribute to all mothers, goddess, and others. And so it's a tribute to our mothers, and it's the tribute to the mother of us all, the mother of mothers, and God the Mother. How about that? Or the Divine Feminine, a tribute to her. A tribute to that beautiful, flowing, feminine energy that is so much the glue that holds us all together, that holds families together, that, you know, really, we know that that our universe, Mother Spirit, is the ocean of beingness, that we are all in. And I like to think, I definitely equate her creative energy as the creative energy of any mother. She carries her child in the bag of waters and nurtures it, tenderly nurtures it for 9 months, human mother does, until it's ready to be born upon the earth. And our universe mother spirit is like a cosmic bag of waters that we're all tiny little spirit embryos being nurtured in her cosmic womb.
And the circuitry of ministry, ministering
yeah.
spirits that watch over us, guide and protect us and try to help us to direct our lives in more spiritual domains.
It's like our umbilical, isn't it? It's our cosmic umbilical cord.
Indeed.
Her adjutant mind spirits, the circuits that encircuit us with her. It's like the cosmic umbilical. So there's a pattern there, and I love to look for that, and the teachings of the Urantia book are just astonishing and beautiful that way.
Certainly one of the few sources that we have of information about that aspect of the divine that is really functional and helps to make sense of the whole way the universe works.
Right. You know, I've told people, and this is, by the way, folks, this is a call-in show. We want to hear from you. You want to do a shout-out to your mom, say what you love about motherhood, what you love about being a mother, what you love about having a mother. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The call-in number is 646-716-8158. So give us a call. Anybody that's out there that wants to talk about their mom or the cosmic mother, the mother of us all. I've told a couple of people recently, and it just really struck me, and I've said this before publicly and privately, that the Urantia book for me is next to the birth of my children. And in terms of experiences that have changed me as a person for the better, the two experiences that have completely changed me for the better, I mean, bar none, I hold them absolutely equal to each other. One is the Urantia book, finding and reading the Urantia book. The other is the birth of my children. Both are an ongoing commitment. Both have affected me in ways that are just astonishing to me. And so, you know, somebody asked me why, you know, because that's kind of startling to say. Most mothers would say, would not hold up even religion. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know if they would. Some people wouldn't hold up religion as being as important as their children, their spiritual life. But the reason for me is because both taught me something very valuable. The Urantia book taught me how much God the Father, God the Mother, and the universe loves me. And having my children taught me how much God the Father, God the Mother, and the universe loves me. It's the same lesson, but it's coming from two different directions. One is me feeling the all-pervasive power of loving somebody so much that I would gladly, in a heartbeat, lay down my life for that person. And I would do anything for them, so that their comfort and their well-being would be assured. My own is secondary. It's the greatest lesson of unselfishness that I've ever experienced. And what the Urantia book gave me shows me that what the universe, what the Heavenly Father and the Heavenly Mother feel for me is that kind of love exponentially to the level of perfection.
That is a pretty amazing concept, that we could be loved that much.
Right.
Even more than we can imagine, that the intensity of loving experience that you have as a parent or as a mother, that willingness to just do anything to care for, to nurture that new life that you've helped to bring into the world, and then to think in those kinds of terms about divinity or about religion. It's a very compelling and powerful idea.
Yeah. I mean, and I can see why parenthood is an essential, is the Urantia book, or the teachings of the Urantia book hold that up as an essential experience. It's essential because really nothing can teach you about God's love like that can.
That unselfish and, ministry of love that sacrifices everything and really expects nothing in return.
Right. There's just nothing like it. And so the Urantia book, you know, I mean, is saying that you know, our heavenly parents, the deities, our father and mother in the universe of universes, love us. But it's a hard concept to understand if you haven't loved somebody like that. You know, if you haven't loved somebody with a parental affection. And what's really amazing is Jesus asked us to love each other that way. You know, when you've, you know, having been pregnant, and here's, you know, something that occurs to me from a feminine point of view, from a mother's point of view. Mothers carry life in their body. We are essentially the human life carriers, right?
Right.
We are the human life carriers. So that seed of life comes all the way down from paradise, and the life carriers planted in the ocean on this earth, and it evolves, and it keeps, that seed keeps transforming and evolving, and eventually ends up in humans like us, who can carry life in our body and nurture it. And so the responsibility for that life begins for every woman I've ever known that has been a mother. The moment she finds out she's pregnant, and she starts to think about that life that's growing within her and the responsibility for that life and the wonder of that life, the promise of that life, the future of that life, the potential of that life, all the beautiful things that that life holds, and she nurtures that, and then she brings it forth when the time is right, when all is in readiness. Here it comes, that precious new being. And now the job just begins. And that goes on forever. She will never not be the human mother of that child. Even though, and this is the way I look at it. That, to me, is my sacred service, the most sacred service I could ever give to the universe, to our great and glorious God, is nurturing that life, bringing it up to be good and and decent and loving, dependable, strong, loyal, honest, trustworthy. That is my gift to the universe, to bring children into the world that make the world a better place and make the universe a better place just by their being. And to me, it's so sacred and so precious. And so from a feminine point of view, when we look at war and we look at all that a mother has done to bring life onto this world and to nurture it and to love it and to raise it, to rear it, to foster its every need, and to get it to an age where now, like a son, it might be able to march off to war and die on a battlefield somewhere. What woman do you know that would say, yes, that's a good idea?
let's use that as the mode to resolve this political conflict.
Yeah. Everything we do is conditioned by this fact that we carry life. And we nurture it. We bring it forth. Everything we do. That's the heart of a mother. Nothing thrills me more than to see mothers with their little kids. Boulder's a great place to do that. You go in a grocery store and you can just, if you just stop for a minute and watch them, they're all around you and they're interacting with each other. And it is the most touching thing in the world to watch mothers interacting with their children. Just when they're out and about, just in their daily routine. And so life is sacred to mothers because we carry it. We feel responsible for it. We feel responsible for it.
So and how is a mother's... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
How is a mother's love different from a father's love?
Well, you know, we know that a father's love is more volitional. Fathers
right.
are, you know, in a human sense, the mother is the first source and center for the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's the first voice they hear. She's the first closeness, intimacy they experience. And a father is the second one.
And one of the things that we know about mother love is that it's really responds to the immediacy of need. You know, when a baby cries or a baby needs something, the mother is sort of tuned in to respond instantly. There's almost an innate circuitry between that mother and child that causes her to literally need to respond instantly to
right.
to nurture or to protect or to comfort that baby.
Right. And that's not always, you know, I think that as we progress as a civilization, traditionally, and, you know, for anybody listening that hasn't read the Urantia book yet, there is in the Urantia book the section called The History of Urantia, which describes the evolution of real basic systems of human civilization, and one of them is the evolution of the family, which the Urantia book says is the cornerstone, the building block of civilization. A civilization is only as good as its families are. So the something that's just really fascinating is, you know, how, you know, the evolution of the patriarchal society, the evolution of the family unit, the mores based on, you know, agriculture, horticulture, little tidbits and insights about how women evolved, how men evolved, how our how our ways of doing things evolved. And it's just, I think, very insightful. So I highly recommend it. But
how
know,
our
it,
various
it,
beliefs about the roles in society have
right.
evolved.
Right. And because women are essentially the ones that bring life onto the world, and we are the ones equipped to nurture it and care for it and maintain it and give it what it needs to thrive and survive, we traditionally hold the hearth and the home fires, right? And then go out and provide, then get what's needed to keep the family alive. So they provide, and men have always provided the needs of the family, but women have been the one to administer those provisions. So that's a real, you know, and that kind of kept us, I mean, having children changes everything. It changes everything. And you have to kind of stick to home base because they need you when you're a mom. And so that changes everything for us. I think we really have to focus in and become like the nuclear center of the family. And oftentimes, you know, we're the ones that hold it together. We become that base. That home base. And it's interesting, there's a pattern again in the universe of universes. Our universe mother is the universe. She is the space. And
that was
and
a very interesting study we did recently in our study group about the relationship between the Creator Son and the Creative Mother Spirit, and the fact that that's, you know, holding the space for the universe is one of the functions of the Mother Spirit.
Right.
And that she's sort of providing the home. She is the home. She is the, you know, over time through history, we've had these concepts, although sometimes vague, of Mother Earth. You know, we
right.
use the terminology Mother Earth as being our home and our and where we live. And isn't it interesting to have the that new language or that new way of seeing the universe, where we find that the divine feminine is actually the space, the material space.
Yeah. She
in which
is
our universe revolves, yeah.
Right. Hey, we have a caller. Let's take a call.
Yeah.
Area code 705, you're with us on this tribute to mothers.
Hi, this is Krista. Suits Marshall.
Krista.
Hi, Krista.
Good morning, ladies, and everybody who's listening. I just thought I would respond to your question about the difference between a mother and a father.
Good.
Because that's just something that's always really absorbed my attention. And about, I don't know, 10 years ago I did a kind of an informal survey of everybody that I knew who was in a good, solid relationship, you know, who had good relationships with their families, their friends, their social work, just to get a sense of, you know, sort of how do people intuit this. And to this day, the best answer, the one that defines the issue for me, is this. So one man said to me, well, take the example of walking a dog. He says, when Linda, his wife, walks the dog, she walks the dog on a leash, you know, and I said, but me, I let the dog walk free with me, run free. And I said, what? You let, the, you know, in a city, you're walking the dog without a leash? And he says, yes, because freedom has a price, you know. And he says that, you know, men support freedom. That was part of what he said, and whereas women more represent care, you know. And he said the same thing with our sons. He says, Linda's always protecting, you know, she's a really good mom, and I love her, I respect her. She's always protecting them, sort of, and hovering over them, you know, do they have enough to eat, are they doing well enough, you know. She's always sort of hovering over them. And he says, my job is to make my sons hate me. Like there's a quote in the Bible that reflects this. And, so, you know, meaning, you know, I have strict, you know, I have my standards, I have a duty to raise them up to be people who, you know, who sort of follow their, you know, the highest road and the highest law. And you know what? There's no deviation to that. You know, you're either surrendered to the highest law or you're not. You know, so I just thought that was just an interest, and that will always be like an interesting polarity between men and women. You know, that the guy take, and I've noticed this on the streets as I've, you know, drive through the city. Most often, if you see a dog that's not on the leash, it's with a man. Whereas, like, women have dogs on their leashes because they don't want them to run across the street and get killed, you know. Whereas
right,
with men,
right, they're protecting.
You know. So anyway, that's my...
What an interesting response to that question, too, because in a way it's really indicative of, you know, the free will God concept. And I think just in general, women probably do have a little bit more of a challenge with that.
Well, and we see, let's face it, men are in a position to be more disciplinarians. And children take discipline much better from men than they do from women. They take it much better from father. I mean, if father hands it down, okay, you know, we don't question it. If mother does, well, we try to manipulate and get around it, you know. And traditionally, and I think it's because of what you said, Krista, that men are more, they're more objective about that. Women are more subjective about their children.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, they
men
care,
are more objective.
They care more about their children's well-being and
right.
happiness, whereas I think men maybe care more about, well, you know, you've got to do what's right regardless of how you feel about it.
Right.
You know, and there's two, you know, there's always that polarity. You know?
Well, and here's an interesting thought, too, and this is something in a conversation I had with my friend Chris Halverson one time, and we were talking about this very thing and the very roles of the cosmic mother and father and how it comes down and how it plays out all the way here on this sex planet, this with sex creatures and mothers and fathers. And we were talking about this idea of space, that the mother of the universe is the space of the universe, and she can be anywhere present at once. And the father of the universe is the time of the universe, and he can be anywhere, but not all at once. He has the freedom to move freely through any aspect, but he can't be everywhere all at once, which I thought was an interesting distinction. And so we were talking about how that plays out on this world, and I said, you know, I get that when women do hold space, that's why our home is so important to us. It's our space, and we want to embellish our space, and
mm-hmm.
we love our space, we create a space. We create a space for people to come into, like our families, our friends, where we can sit at a table together and enjoy each other's company. Women are very much the social directors
mm-hmm.
of you know, the world, and that's because we that spacing where we like to create a beautiful space and invite people into it, and it's wonderful. And I said, but the trouble with that is when a woman has been or a female child has been traumatized, seriously traumatized in her life, like the big ones like rape, for instance, or incest or something like that, molestation, she has a really, really hard time getting that out of her space. It's like,
mm-hmm.
where do I go to get away from that?
Mm-hmm.
And Chris's comment was, yes, but a father teaches transcendence. So a loving father will be able to help his daughter transcend that hurt and move beyond it. And that just struck me because I know that I heard the truth of that. My own father was like that. He always did that for me. He always helped me transcend the hurts of time. And I realized some other patterns in my own life. When I was hurt, I would run to my mother for nurturing. When I was scared, I would run to my father.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just basic stuff, that basic differences that children instinctively experience in that relationship of mother and father. So, you know, but and the other aspect of that space thing for moms, I really do think mothers, and I've met a lot of people who grew up without mothers, and they have a problem with this. mothers teach boundaries. Isn't that interesting? It's your mother will tell you that's not polite. You don't do that, and you know that's not what we ought to do. And that's mother's role, really, often teaches boundaries. What's good? What's healthy? What's, you know, accepted? What's normal? What's, you know? So that's interesting.
I think that there's something, you know, if I may add one more point on it.
Sure.
Before I go. And this is just something I'm sort of working on still, like an understanding. So I'm not quite sure it's complete. But it seems to me that the mother aspect of life is the felt dimension. It's how we feel. I'm not talking just about, you know, just on the emotional plane, but I'm just talking about on a very, you know, deep mindal plane. Like if you notice, all of the adjutant mind spirits are expressed as urges or, you know, like these deep drives and things that come from our body, you know, our body brain. It's very much a felt reality, you know, about the mother's mind. It's based on our perceptions, you know, of our our brains, of our nervous systems and everything like that. It's a very physically, it's a kind of a mind that enables us to operate in the physical world. And as a result, because it's more in tune with how things feel, like this is my belief now, and I can't, you know, back it up with what it says in the Urantia book, but to me, a mother cares how her children feel. Like it is important how something feels. So, like, if somebody's abusing you, there's no way that feels good, you know? Like, that's an indication that it's not right and that we need to respect that. And our society, I think, has been overwhelmingly patriarchal in its history. And all of the institutions, you know, even the home, school, industry, the church, it's all been based on sort of these rules from above that you follow, you know, whether, like, it doesn't matter, you know, how it feels. You just do what we say, you know. And I think that the age of mother is going to be becoming an age where, well, it does matter. You know, you can't hurt people in order to, you know, make enforce your highest religious views or whatever. You know, you can't beat the truth into people. It's just not right.
Wow, what a great insight.
Oh, thank you.
I love that. You know, really, because you remember the old saying, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing could be further from the truth than that.
Yeah, it's true. And, I mean, certainly for little, you know, for children, as adults, hopefully it is true. But, yes, and it can maim you for life.
Yeah.
And it can maim you all the way through seven mansion worlds, you know, before you finally healed of it, right?
So. Exactly. Right.
So it does matter, you know, I think, how something feels, and that's mother's greatest power. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's her intercession for us, you know, in front of him, in before father, you know.
Yes.
But you know, we are told in the Urantia book that Mother Spirit bows to Michael, you know, in every way, like I forget what the word is used, but, you know,
she subordinates herself to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would think that was a bit of an expanded thing, so that I would sincerely doubt that Michael would actually do something that didn't feel good to her.
No.
You know? And it was just,
no,
you know,
way.
Okay, Michael, I could just see him saying, okay, that was plan A. Here's plan B. You know, how do you like this one? And it's sort of his job is to sort of, because he has the greater power, you know, maybe the all-seeing sort of power wisdom of Father God. But, you know, there is that, you know, mercy and compassion thing too. You know, you can't, you know, you have to respect the other creatures of the universe and how it impacts them, you know, your grand visions and plans.
Well, we know he was tuned into her because look at how compassionate he was. Look at how caring and nurturing he was as a man.
Mm-hmm.
He was the epitome of a balanced human being, equal parts, masculine and feminine.
And
that's
a valiant.
So magnificent.
A valiant and heroic in the most chivalrous way.
Right. In the most chivalrous way. And reasonable. And I think, you know, you point out that Mother Spirit in their long universe careers, once he becomes the sovereign of the universe, but only then does she subordinate herself to him completely. So he has to earn it.
Yeah,
he has to earn it.
Right, because then she can trust him.
Right. And that's, you know, I know that's pretty, I mean, on that level of transaction, I know that, you know, those probably aren't even issues, but still.
Well, why wouldn't they be? Because, you know, we're all still involved, evolving as the Supreme, right? That's just like no way finished yet. And to my understanding anyway, that does include Mother, Spirit, and Michael. Like there is a kind of a way that we all evolve together, you know, which is why this universe is not settled in light and life yet. So, you know, who knows what issues Mother, Spirit, and Michael have.
A total team effort.
Well,
true partnership.
What is it about space and time, male and female, that we relate to in our relationships? You know, what are some of the differences? It seems to me that women are more dependent on having a close physical or spatial relationship to their mate in order to feel connected. Seems like men can be in a relationship and not necessarily need to always be together in order to feel like the relationship is solid. And some of these might be maybe gross generalizations, but I think about, you know, men sort of making a commitment, getting married, sort of becoming connected to their mate, and then sort of going off to war and being gone for any particular length of time, and knowing that she's there sort of waiting for him and there to come home to, and where he's able to, you know, sort of go off and function in the world. Whereas women, I think, really feel that separation in a much more tangible, perhaps frustrating way. And
Go ahead. Well, no, I'm just going to say, based on what you just said, they've done a lot of research between males and females, and they're, you know, that we're hardwired differently. And they've researched it all the way down as far as they can go to do meaningful research on the different ways that baby girls and baby boys and little girls and little boys react to things. And they have found clear, distinct patterns. It's too obvious to ignore. And I'll just give you an example. They'll put a 15-month-old baby, a male baby and a girl baby, in the same exact situation, and it almost invariably happens the same way. They put them behind a gated area where they can't get out, and mom sets them down, and everything's fine, but the situation changes when mom walks away. Little boys, 15-month-old boys, will invariably try to find a way out. This is so cute because men are problem solvers, right? Mm. They are problem solvers. They say, okay, I have a problem. Here's the problem. I need to get out of here because mom has walked away. And so they immediately start testing the boundaries, pushing on the gate, finding a way to get out. The little girls, baby girl, 15-month-old baby girl, melts down. Mom walked away. I'm behind the boundary. I can't get out. I'm going to cry. My feelings are hurt. And then they do these kinds of experiments, like with four-year-olds, for instance. They'll put a group of four-year-olds in a room. Four-year-old little girls will take about 20 minutes before they all know each other. They're holding hands. They're talking. They're sitting in a circle together. They're so
they
social.
They find out each other's names.
Right.
You know, things take about each
about.
Other.
Within an hour, they'll have a little social network already going. Boys, on the other hand, will go and find a toy they like and go off in a corner and play by themselves. So, you know.
Or they'll play next to each other.
Right, but don't take my toy.
Mm-hmm.
Very territorial, right? Very possessive of what they have, what's theirs. And, you know, this is just the basic, and, you know, the Urantia book says we'll never completely understand each other, but I think it's helpful when you look at every human aspect of our lives through these lenses so that you can at least understand where men are coming from or where women are coming from. You know, this notion that women are weak, I think, is very interesting. Weak, why? Because we feel? Because we care about life? Because it affects us? That means we're weak? You think me weak, that I would be devastated if I had to bury one of my children? That's not weak. And, you know, yeah, men can go off to war because of the very thing you said, Krista, that they are more detached from those feelings. But
and they
also
love. I also think that men, and excuse me if this offends any men listening, but I do think that men have an enjoyment of violence that's much greater than what women enjoy, and that's reflected in the sorts of movies they watch. And like I've just been like just blown away by watching some of the sweetest, most spiritual men that I know watch a kick butt movie and, you know, sort of really enjoy it. And
really enjoy it.
And then, you know, it, like even with my own son, like when he was like 14, 15, he just wanted to go into the army. And I just was, what? You know, you're the child of these like hippie parents, you know, peace, love, and all of that. And you, where did this come from? And yet, you know, and subsequently I've sort of really noticed like guys who want to go into the police or the army or whatever, like there is this sort of, you know, it's they like it. They like that idea,
yeah.
Like that thrill and that challenge and that excitement.
And whereas the chick flicks are about romance and about connecting and about this sort of, intensity of relationships.
Yeah, and they have more color to them, and, you know, they have more, you know,
and men
everything.
Do tend to have sort of a low threshold of tolerance for that as a form of recreation. You know, it's kind of like,
mm-hmm.
There's a limit to how much romance they can sort of tolerate.
Yeah, and a lot of those movies are really corny too, but, you know.
And
yeah,
I know a lot of men that like chick flicks too, you know, and will sit and cry with the best of them, you know, and because they're more in their sensitive side, and that's great too, you know. And I like some kick butt movies too, I have to admit. Just thinking about motherhood today, and I was thinking about this show, and a movie that came to mind for me was Saving Private Ryan. And the reason it came to mind was because it was all about going to save this guy for his mother.
Mm-hmm.
She had already lost 3 of her 4 sons in the war. And, you know, Steven Spielberg is amazing. He will always be the guy to tell the untold story, the story that needs to be told. And it's just so engaging and so amazing. And so these guys are going to go off and try to save Private Ryan because he's the last child that his mother has left. And what came to me was them walking along on this mission to save Private Ryan, talking about their own mothers and saying, what about my mother? Well, what if I die? How will my mother feel? You know, who is this guy, and why should we be risking our lives for him? What about my mother?
Mm.
And the thing that struck me about the movie was throughout the whole movie, though, here were these masculine, virile men, soldiers, going on a mission for somebody's mother, and they talked about mothers throughout the whole movie. They didn't talk about saving Private Ryan for his father. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And in that movie was an insight to me about how men feel about our tenderness. They do love it, and they cherish it, and they understand. This is what we'd call chivalry, right? And some women think that chivalry is dead. And in some ways, we've damaged it because of the women's movement or the movement for equality has displaced men and made them feel like they don't know where they stand anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But men who love their mothers protect that tenderness.
Yeah, and it is like you were saying earlier about are we weak? Well, I mean, that's our power. You know, that power of love and our care, and men do absolutely depend on that. you know, because in older years, you know, often you read this statistically, it's true that, well, when the wife dies, men don't do so well.
Right.
But when the husband dies, you know, women do just fine, generally, you know. So they do, so it is a strength, you know, this tremendous power of love and care that women have.
Yes.
You know.
It is a strength.
And men, you know, I mean, it's, men need it.
They do need it, and I think they know they do. You know, if they're in touch with them, with their own emotions and their own inner self, they know they need it. And they're happier when a woman is around. My husband, I'm like a security blanket for him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even need to talk. He just wants me to be there.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He just wants to be there.
Doesn't need to have a lot of communication.
Yeah, not at all.
Just don't criticize me.
Yeah. I will be there. Just don't criticize. Yeah. So I wanted to share a quote from the Urantia book in this vein, because it's from, a section that everybody will almost universally say they love, and that's when John Mark and Jesus went up on the hillside together. Known on high is the day that a boy spent in the hills alone with God. And John Mark was just a teenager, so he was an adolescent. He's getting ready for family life, and Jesus knew that, so what did they talk about the whole time? They talked about family life and children, which is what you wouldn't think would happen. But, you know, if you were talking about two men up in the hills alone right now, say your husband and your son are going to go camping and they're going to be up in the hills alone, and are they going to talk about child rearing and children? And, you know, I have found that men do, when they're together alone in a setting like that, talk about very intimate things, and they feel safe to talk about those things with each other. But Jesus said to John Mark, the master went on to explain to John how a child is wholly dependent on his parents, and the associated home life, for all his early concepts of everything intellectual, social, moral, and even spiritual, since the family represents to the young child all that he can first know of either human or divine relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The child must derive his first impressions of the universe from his mother's care. He is wholly dependent on the earthly father for his first ideas of the heavenly father. The child's subsequent life is made happy or unhappy, easy or difficult, in accordance with his early mental and emotional life, conditioned by these social and spiritual relationships of the home. A human being's entire afterlife is enormously influenced by what happens during the first few years of existence.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what you were saying earlier, Krista, that, you know, some of those negative things can stay with us for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, they, that's what the mansion worlds are for, right? So it's like there's seven mansion worlds, and your earth life is extremely important, enough so that if a child, you know, dies young and goes to the probationary nurseries, they never make it out of this universe because they didn't get that earth experience. But anyway, so whatever happens here, if we become really messed up due to abuse or like whatever, you know, sure, that could follow us for many a world before we work it out and heal it.
And the intriguing thing about that, you know, is this idea that a child derives his first impressions of the universe from the mother's care. And I've thought about that a lot. Like, again, we are space, and we are creating a space where a child feels safe and nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. If you feel at home in the universe, and that's really about stability, you know, that's about stability. Can you imagine what would happen to all of us if our universe mother spirit decided to pick up and move to another place?
Right.
You know.
Our very world would disintegrate.
Yeah. She becomes the security and the certainty, the stability, because she holds that nuclear space where everything can happen now. Everything can grow and thrive because she is ultimately stable.
Yeah. And hopefully it sets up a secure universe as well, you know, because it's an unconditionally loving and accepting universe, you know, that
right.
you get from your mother. And you know, so father, like we were talking earlier, you know, could be a bit of a different story. You know, father's got a different slant. But, yeah, because if you don't trust the universe from that early age, you'll always perceive it as being against you. You know, life is somehow
right.
stacked against you, and it's a struggle, and you have to, you know, prove your worth and your validity, you know, at every turn, and it becomes very difficult.
You become at enmity with it. It's you're hostile towards it. And,
yeah, because you think it's hostile towards you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting that he put that tremendous responsibility on mother and father. Father to be the representation of the father's love, and mother to be the representation of stability
mercy.
And place. Yeah, and mercy.
Of mercy,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I just read that this morning. You know, father, I forget what father was, but the eternal son is the mercy aspect of it. You know, I think love and mercy, you know, the distinction.
And the book says that original son is the mother's son. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It is the mother aspect.
So it's like kind of, I love you anyway. Whatever you do, you know, you might disappoint me, and there you go. You know, you peed on the floor again, but, well, you know, I still love you. Like, I'm still madly, crazily in love with you. Doesn't matter what you do. But, you know, you need both. You need dad, you know, dad to come along and, you know, put a stop to all that nonsense. But...
And then there are the aspects of the, you know, the daughters of the universe, the local universe, mother spirit, the angelic hosts.
Mm.
They're nominated for the service by the local universe mother spirits, and they are, you know, dedicated to serving us and taking care of us and guiding us from that point onward. You know, they move through the universe with us as our guardians and companions. And so it seems to me like their care for us is a direct reflection of the mother circuits of the universe.
No. And that is divine ministry. And they are the merciful ministers. And
what does that ministry look like and feel like, or how is that a feminine attribute?
What?
Pardon me?
Well, I think it feels a lot like a mother's love.
Like, what are some of the ways that is sort of differentiated? I think of something just as simple or as basic as, and again, these are broad generalizations, and I know of a lot of exceptions to that rule, but I know that, for example, when my husband is hungry and he goes upstairs to the kitchen to get himself something to eat, and he comes down, and invariably I ask him, "What are you eating? Did you bring me some?" And it doesn't matter how many times this happens. He's like, "Oh, no, I didn't. Well, can I have a bite? Or yeah, would you get me some?" And then he'll go back upstairs and, you know, he'll willingly go and get some for me. But it just isn't something that is second nature. Or maybe I should say first nature, for him to think about, "I'm hungry, maybe she's hungry too. I should bring something for her as well." Whereas if I go up to get something to eat, I invariably make two of whatever it is that I'm preparing, because I just sort of automatically think about taking care of him or nurturing him. Another example of that I remember, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that, is, you know, "I'm cold. Would you go put a sweater on?" You know, the mother is cold, so, you know, everybody in the house needs to dress warmer.
Yeah.
Whereas there is a sense of separateness or detached identity that exists for a man that is in a way different from how a woman will experience family.
And so both are so valuable, and I can see that they make up such a beautiful whole. A mother and a father, a family, is such a beautiful, and when it's good, as you had said, Christy, you asked people, you looked for people who were really exemplary of healthy relationships, of good partnerships between the masculine and the feminine. And when that's going on, it makes everybody around it feel better. Did you ever notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
When a man and a woman love each other and treat each other well and they have a good partnership going on, everyone that comes into their presence is blessed by it.
And the reverse is so true, too. Like if they're bickering and they don't like each other, it's so disturbing, you know, for everybody.
Mm. And children who have
so
to grow
true.
Up. Yeah.
Anyways, I have to get off of the line now, but
well, thank
it's
you
been
for
so wonderful
calling.
Talking with you. And
thank you so much for joining our conversation today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye now. You contributed so much. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Wow, thanks, Krista. That was awesome. And we invite you, whoever you are out there, to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. That was a wonderful conversation we had with Krista. And I know you probably have something you want to say, so give us a call, 646-716-8158. We're talking about mothers and motherhood. I want to share with you something that a poem I wrote when I was pregnant. And because it just, for me, and I've written several poems about motherhood, but this one really came right from my heart. And I was pregnant at the time that I wrote it. It's called The Tiny Soul Within. Let me see if I can remember it all. The tiny soul within, mortally attended and immortally suspended, treasured dreams await to sculpt your mind. Dreams that once perchance were mine. Dreams of relishing all my time with the tiny soul within. What beauty waits so patiently upon those tiny lids fused tight to bring this precious little soul from darkness into glistening light? Perhaps my own smiling face will kiss them open into sight, then sing them shut again at night. Dear God, I long to hold you tight, the tiny soul within. To think those tiny Dresden hands you hold so close inside will shape your future with their deeds, and to your wishes will abide, and hopefully reap love and pride to be cherished again and again. This I pray with all my heart for the tiny soul within. And when your long-awaited debut is upon its waking hour, I know how very impatient I'll be to behold my blossoming flower. And pride will consume me, I have no doubt. And I will know what life is about when passing through life's eternal spout, the tiny soul within comes out.
Wow, Paula. That's really profound. Oh, wow. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Never heard that one before.
That's very dear to my heart, that one is.
I'll bet.
Because those tiny souls within that came out, they are an endless source of joy for me. And to watch them grow, to be a part of their growth, to be there for their lessons, for their hardships, to fight for them, to care for them, to love them with all my heart, has been the greatest thing that could ever happen. And, you know, I can honestly say that, you know, I've adopted also. So for all of you who perhaps didn't get a chance to carry a child within your womb, that means nothing. You carry them in your heart. That's where you carry them. And, you know, when I picked up my beautiful little Mei Li, she was 6 months old. I went to get her in China. When I picked up that precious soul and held her in my arms, you know, and it, interestingly, it took about a year. The whole process took about a year from the moment we conceived of it to the moment when we held her in our arms. And it was every bit as precious as giving birth. And to know that, to see that tiny soul, some other mother carried her for me. Oh, my God, I owe her everything. She gave me the most precious gift that a person can give another person. So there's my emotional rant for the day, Crystalyn. I'm sure you're glad.
I'm all teared up and all choked up. I don't know if I could say anything to that.
But, you know,
I just think of, you know, how grown up Mei Li is now, and just remember that adorable little baby when you first brought her home. Can't hardly believe it's been that long already. She's a junior in high school already, or almost
she
a senior in high school.
She went and got me my coffee this morning at Starbucks. She drove to Starbucks, got me my coffee, and brought it back to me. So see where that leads? Oh, God, it's so good. It's so, and no matter how many times I see this transformation in a child from a baby to an adult, and every step of development along the way, it never becomes less miraculous to me. It only becomes more miraculous. I just am thrilled by it, to see their changes day by day. To see them, the discoveries they make, the decisions they make, to be a part of that, to be able to be there to help them decide something, to be there to help them, to talk them down when they're, you know, just in a state. And interestingly, they do that for me too. My adult children, they talk me down. I can tell them, say, I am just in a state. Oh, well, here, let's think about it, Mom. What's going on? You know, it's precious. It's just, is there anything better? I can't imagine there is. You know, and knowing the Urantia book has given me that aspect of, I am loved by my Creator that much and infinitely more. That's, it's like Jesus said, what does it matter if all things earthly crash? When you know that, when you know that, it doesn't matter. You are in, as the Christians say, in the everlasting arms. Yeah, you're secure.
Well, and you know, that's a good sort of segue into this this topic of what is universe security? What is really our spiritual security? What does it really mean? What does it really look like? What is it about our eternal life that gives us a sense of security?
Right.
Or identity that makes us feel like we have the wherewithal to go out into the world, out into the universe, and take risks, try new things, be brave and unfettered and really take risks. It's the sense that we're safe, or we have a safe place to come home to. That no matter what happens, we're loved, and we're, you know, without that early beginning in life, people don't necessarily have that sense of security or that feeling that they can, that they're sort of invincible or can go out and conquer the world or do, follow their dreams. they're
how invaluable.
Indeed.
How invaluable is that? I mean, you have a real experience of that too, Crystalline. You know, you and your mother, you know, for all mothers are, no mother is perfect. But your mother is such a stable person. And she provides stability to your family. I see that when I see you together. She is a nuclear. She is a nuclear figure in your family, and it's awesome. It's amazing, and you're such a close family. I love that too. Hey, we have another caller.
All right,
let's take the call. 719, you're with us on our tribute to mothers. Hello, area code 719.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Kathy Hughes.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm
glad you
calling in. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Well, thank you for calling in. What do you have to share on the concept of motherhood here today?
Throughout the program, there's been so much wonderful things that have been shared, but what comes to my mind is the idea that since I found the Urantia book, is the idea of being reparented, because as much as my parents loved me, they were human, and I'm just finding that the love I found of the mother and the mother spirit I'm learning about through the Urantia book is very healing to me, you know, to find that love. And that is what's giving me a lot of confidence to go back out into the world and experience things that maybe I missed when I was coming up in the world. So,
because you didn't feel as confident, huh, prior to finding the Urantia book?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Yeah. And you would say maybe it's at least somewhat in part due to parenting.
Parenting and, just different things, circumstances in my life, unfortunate incidents, and a lot of damage had occurred to me during my life, and I had pretty much given up hope that anything would change, and I found the Urantia book, and I read about the Jesus papers, started just learning, you know, really got that one-on-one relationship, and started, the more I read, the more I realized just, you know, how much God really loved me, and God the Father, and I learned about God the Mother, and it turned my life totally around. It's the most amazing, wonderful thing I've ever experienced. So,
Wow. Well, Paula started out by saying that, you know, one of the things that had the most impact on her, other than having her children, was that the experience of finding the Urantia book. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by that because I didn't ever really have the experience of finding the Urantia book because I grew up with it. And so I'm always fascinated to hear those stories about how it impacted someone's life. Because for me, it's almost hard for me to even imagine what it might have been like growing up without it. And I think it's just a wonderful experience for me to hear those dramatic stories about how life-changing it is for most people. I don't know if you feel like sharing any of those personal experiences, but I'd welcome you to if you feel so moved.
Not really. Just suffice it to say, they were traumatic. They were significant. And I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of fear. I didn't have any trust. I didn't have any self-esteem left. And in a very short amount of time, just really since January when I found the book, it's just been phenomenal. I don't know how to explain it other than just it's just the love, you know, once I realized God isn't a punishing God and he's an accepting God, and that then once I learned about the Supreme, I don't understand it all in depth enough to go into it, but just
how
the whole idea.
How did you find the book?
Quite by accident. It was a series of events. Somebody had told me about the book a long time ago, and so I bought it, and it sat on my shelf. And another friend who I knew online happened to post something about an online study course that I signed up for, and it was through that study course that I had a spiritual experience and really started digging into the Urantia book. And so I learned as much. I knew about Jesus, but I never really made a personal connection. And then I learned about thought adjusters, which blew my mind, but I knew it was real. And then I wanted to learn more about the Supreme, and then the seven-edged mind spirits, and the whole idea of, you know, actually praying for wisdom and getting it, or praying for courage, and just the whole idea that how the whole universe is really just set up to support us, and how much God loves us and stepped himself all the way down here to be with us. It's just mind-blowing, you know. So I feel very safe and very loved.
Oh, man, that's so wonderful. That is the pearl of great price right there. That's it.
Yeah.
You just described it. And do you think if your parents had had something like that in their lives that really helped them understand, that they would have, you know, it would have helped them be better parents?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they did their best, and they weren't bad parents, but, you know, they didn't know. So since they didn't know, they couldn't share it with me, and I didn't know, so I couldn't share it with my children. And I'm sharing it with them now, and, well, first, they can't believe the change they've seen in me or my parents. They're just blown away. And my younger son wants to know all about the Urantia book now. So it's a phenomenal thing. I just, you know, I just learned to share it. It's a good thing.
They've seen the changes in you. And
they
have. Yeah. Oh, man, that's the greatest testimony that anybody could give, really, is when other people see how they've changed. And I've met people who were criminals who completely transformed their lives after reading the Urantia book. And because they understood the consequences. I mean, fully understood the consequences, like we've just been talking about, about being a parent, about being a human being, about what you contribute to life, about how you affect everybody around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the consequences of your immortality, the consequences of, you know, the happiness and health of humanity. And you get it when you read the
mm-hmm.
Urantia book. You get it. I mean, it comes to you full force. It's like, wow.
You know,
I am
fantastic.
Loved. I am loved, but I have responsibility for being a child of God. It's not just about, hey, yeah, it's all happening to me. I'm good. I'm great. I'm getting all this stuff. This stuff is all coming to me, and God loves
mm-hmm.
me, and hey, everything's bad. No, it's the other side of that, which is the consequence of being a member of a loving family. Now there's a responsibility on
Absolutely.
You to spread that love and to make
but
life
it's
better.
Just I mean, who wouldn't want to? It's like, whoa. You know?
Right.
Hey, everybody, I have got to share this with you. You need to know this. It will change your life. It will change the life of the world or the whole planet. It's like, this is the deal. Yeah, why doesn't everybody know this? Gosh.
Well,
who wouldn't want to?
Well, this is the good news.
Yeah. You're right. Who wouldn't want to? Because don't we all want to be loved and accepted?
Yes.
Don't we all want to feel safe? Don't
mm-hmm.
we all want to believe that we're in a friendly and well-ordered universe that's
mm-hmm.
that's managed by a loving mother and father, you know, and that the greater universe of universes is upheld by the most magnificent, loving God, and that all that is upheld by love And service, that's his economy. He divests everything of himself. He gives everything.
Yeah.
You know, the lessons are just too powerful and too beautiful to not share.
Well, and you know, it isn't something that we just get automatically from life experience, that we live in a friendly universe. In fact, you know, we were talking earlier about how guys tend to like movies about war or playing war games or, you know, having a more perhaps aggressive or violent approach to their recreational life. And it's like there isn't a lot that confirms for most people that we do live in a well-ordered, friendly universe when so much of our immediate experience or our the kind of things that we believe we observe going on around us tend to promote the opposite concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, yeah, it's hard to find reason in all of that.
But once you know this and have actually been able to experience it, then you really do want to share that with everybody else around you so that they aren't afraid or responding or living or reacting out of fear all the time.
Right. It's a horrible place to be. So.
Yeah, it is a horrible place to be. And it's clearly what motivates, you know, one of the things that I love about The Course in Miracles, and the Arantxa book reiterates this as well, is that there's really two great causes of all the emotions. One is fear and the other is love. There really isn't hate and love. There's fear and love. If you're in a state of fear, that will cause hate, distrust, doubt, anger, you know, enmity. All of these things are caused by fear. If you're in a state of love, that will cause you to be unselfish, nurturing, compassionate, caring, understanding, sympathetic, loyal, tolerant. So there's just two great states, fear and love. And The Course in Miracles says wherever there is fear, there is a call to love. And that strikes me, you know, because the Arantxa book also says something about the creature's need, you know, wherever. And I'm gonna pull that quote up because it's so beautiful.
The greater the love needs.
I just read that yesterday. Then the more love is poured out to us.
Yeah. And isn't that the universe that we've come to know and love in the Arantxa book? I mean, I kind of measure everything by that. Here it is. It's from actually from paper 2, which we know those first 5 papers are all about God and His love and His mercy and His ministry, and just His everythingness. You know, His perfection. And they're talking about God at paper 2, section 4. It says God is inherently kind, naturally compassionate, and everlastingly merciful. And never is it necessary that any influence be brought to bear upon the Father to call forth His loving kindness. The creature is wholly sufficient to ensure the full flow of the Father's tender mercies and His saving grace. Since God knows all about His children, it is easy for Him to forgive. The better man understands his neighbor, the easier it will be for him to forgive him, even to love him. And there's another one, too. That isn't actually the one I was looking for, but that one was great,
wasn't
it?
Well, and I think that is, you know, when we're getting back to the concept of mother love and the importance of mother love too, is that it does seem like it is more innately that feminine drive to get to know to get to know more information about people so that, for, you know, pretty much for the sole purpose of learning to love them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's one of those feminine characteristics, that we really love to know one another. We enjoy sharing each other's life stories or hearing about what's going on in each other's lives, because that's how we feel connected. That's how we bond with one another. We're sure to share our stories and thereby get to know one another.
Right.
I'm frequently intrigued by the way men get to know one another, or how they enjoy each other, and it's really more about doing things together than it is just sitting around, you know, sort of sharing their life stories. You know, you might know some men who've hung out together for months or years who know very little about each other's life stories.
Not so interpersonal, true.
Yeah. Okay, you guys, I found it. Here's the one I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I love this one. This is from paper 156. So it's in the Jesus Papers. You are destined to live a narrow and mean life if you learn to love only those who love you. Human love may indeed be reciprocal, but divine love is outgoing in all its satisfaction seeking. The less of love in any creature's nature, the greater the love need. And the more does divine love seek to satisfy such need. Love is never self-seeking. It cannot be self-bestowed. Divine love cannot be self-contained. It must be unselfishly bestowed. Was that the one that you just read, Kathy?
Yes, ma'am. That was
recently.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so amazing to think that, you know, here we are, these little creatures with such need, and the universe is just more than willing and ready to pour out that need. And it is such a mother thing, you know, going back to mothers, it is such a motherly thing to want to meet your children's needs. And that is divine love.
I need to just excuse myself for a second. I'm having some technical problem. I'll call back in just a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
So
absolutely.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I'll call right back in. Bye.
So Kathy, where did you grow up in Colorado?
For the most part, I moved here when I was 9 from Kansas City, and I was raised here, yeah.
Oh. And in the southern part of Colorado?
Colorado Springs, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, it is just a cloudy, beautiful day here in Colorado. And the reason I say it's beautiful is because we live in a thirsty state. So when we can get a nice drink of water from the from the powers that be, from the atmosphere, then it's very nurturing for us.
It is. That was the other thing that you were talking about, Chris Halverson, and he's very above my head. He's just so in-depth. But one of the things I'll remember that he was talking about the Supreme and the Universal Mother and everything, and he said, well, if you want growth, pray to the Mother. So that always stuck in my mind. So anytime I think of anything like that, I think of the Mother. And so, yeah, even the growth of a plant or the growth of my spiritual life or the growth of wisdom, or if it's raining, the growth of the trees, that's all the Mother.
Well, you know, that makes sense, because there's another place in the Urantia book where it says, tempt not the angels of your supervision to lead your soul into troublous times. To lead your ease-drifting soul. Ease-drifting, like, in other words, the Urantia book says that one of our greatest problems is that we tend to be lazy.
Ew.
You know, sloth. I think it calls it sloth.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, it's a human tendency to be slothful. And I've thought about it a lot because it tells us that, you know, we are fighting to overcome animal tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and isn't it interesting? It says that over and over again, these animal tendencies. And if you look at your dog, if you have a dog or a cat,
mm-hmm.
are they industrious? No. No, they live to eat and sleep. That's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll play once in a while and take me on a walk. Yeah, that's a great adventure. But I'm not going to try to make the world a better place.
No, no ambition.
No ambition. None whatsoever. So, you know, I love that, you know, they hold that up for us as, you know, so growth is about being willing, I think, and what you said, Halverson, saying that, you know, pray to the mother for growth makes perfect sense because she nurtures life.
Right.
And life is about growth. Life is dynamic. It's evolving. It doesn't stand still. It doesn't stagnate. If it stagnates, it dies. So, you know, and there's another theme that's carried throughout the entire book, that striving for advancement, that striving for growth, to be better today than you were yesterday, to be better tomorrow than you are today. And that, you know, makes perfect sense to me. Pray to the mother for growth. Good one, Chris. Thank you.
There's a little bit out of him.
You do. He's a fun person to talk to. I'll tell you, he'll make you think. And a fun person to listen to. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, we all help each other in that respect, and which is why I love Study Group, why I love to have this show and have people like you call in, because I learned so much. So that's a blessing.
It's a learning adventure. I'm learning about so much, you know, just so much about the universe. The cosmology, it has so much information. I couldn't learn all that in a lifetime. But it's fascinating, and just to see how everything fits together is just more proof, you know, that there is a God. Not that I ever doubted, but for people that don't believe in God, if you don't believe in it after reading that book, I don't know. You know? It couldn't be an accident. This couldn't be an accident. So.
Well, it just makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of the words from a song from Sting where he says, there has to be an invisible sun who shines its light on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the visible sun, there's the invisible sun. And, you know, the seen and the unseen. It's not just the seen, it's also the unseen. So, you know, those are realities that because we can't perceive them with our human senses, we think they don't exist. How silly is that? I mean, look at just the example of microscopes. You know, germs wreaked havoc on us and still do to some respect or another, but at the advent of seeing them through a microscope, we realized, wow, there's this whole microscopic world we didn't even know existed.
Exactly.
Well, was it unreal because we couldn't see it? No. It was very real. And so, you know, to think that to measure reality by only what we perceive with our human senses, that's pretty silly, I think. We have to take in more than that. We have to be willing to take in more than that. So, Crystalline, are you with us now?
I'm back, yes.
Hey,
I was just thinking about what you were saying about what Chris Halverson said about growth and about how we are sort of innately kind of lazy. We don't want to have to struggle unless we have to. And I was also thinking about what we talked about earlier about how women have a hard time sort of understanding man's pugnacity or his you know his interest in, you know, heroic warlike behavior. And you know, one of the things that I wanted to do in this program, in elevating feminine values and appreciating the motherhood instinct and the motherhood aspect of female personalities, was in the process was not to put down men or to to sort of feel the need to male bash. And I was just thinking about the one of the things the Urantia book helps us with in understanding the evolution of our conflicts between men and women, and the newly sort of gained political power or financial power, economic power that women has gained over the last, let's say, 100 years. And I'm thinking about what the Urantia book has to say in Marriage and Family Papers. And it talks about, you know, under mother dominance versus father dominance. It says that it may be that the instinct of motherhood led women into marriage, but it was man's superior strength, together with the influence of the mores, that compelled her to remain in wedlock. And it goes on to say that scant courtesy was paid womankind during the Old Testament, you know, sort of as a reflection on the mores of not only of the herdsmen, I'm paraphrasing here, but that there was so much more focus on war. And it says, man was no more to blame for his low opinion of women during past ages than was woman herself, because she failed to get social recognition during primitive times because she did not function in an emergency the way men did. She was not a spectacular or crisis hero. Maternity was a distinct disability in the existence struggle. Mother love handicapped women in the tribal defense. And primitive women also unintentionally created their dependence on the male by their admiration and applause for his pugnacity and virility. This exaltation of the warrior elevated the male ego, while it equally depressed that of the female and made her more dependent. Then it goes on to say, a military uniform still mightily stirs the feminine emotions.
Can any of us deny that?
I was thinking about the scene in the movie Pride and Prejudice, where all these little young teenage girls are getting all a flutter when the army comes marching through town, you know?
Sure. Or I couldn't help but go to the last scene in the movie The Full Monty, where they're all up there in their policeman uniforms and doing a strip dance.
Yeah.
And how, you know, it's absolutely exciting that scene is. It's a movie I really love. Hey, we have another caller, so hold that thought, Kristen.
Well,
let me just finish the next
paragraph, because it says, among the more advanced races, women are not so large or strong as men. Women, being the weaker, therefore become the more tactful. She early learned to trade upon her sex charm. She became more alert and conservative than man. It goes on to say that, you know, man was women's superior in the battlefield and in the hunt, but at home women has usually outgeneraled even the most primitive of men.
Outgeneraled him. Well, she had her own different skills.
And it's women have always had to work, at least right up to the modern times. Female has really been the real producer. I think about, you know, growing up in Ghana and Africa, women frankly do all the hard labor.
I mean, man, and I think that's true in the world, in lots of places in the world right now. India.
It says, man has usually chosen the easier path, and this inequality has existed throughout the entire history of the human race. woman has been the burden bearer, carrying the family property and tending the children, thus leaving men's hands free for hunting and fighting and hunting.
Hmm. Okay, I'm going to put a caller on.
Okay.
Area code 816, you're with us on our Mother's Day tribute.
And that would be this mother, Lee Lopes.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, Lee.
Hi. Nice
so
to talk
nice
to you.
So nice to hear from you.
And also, I wanted to say hi, too, to Kathy Hughes, because I recognized your name, Kathy, from the sign-in board on Symmetry of Soul.
Well, Kathy dropped off for some
oh, okay.
reason. Kathy, I just want to say thank you, dear, for calling in. It was so great to talk to you. I don't know if she lost her connection or if she just dropped off when I said we had another caller, but it was wonderful. I invite you to call back, or you might have stayed on if you liked. There's no need to drop off. But, so Lee, being a mother and, all that you give, I know what Krystalyn just read, and Krystalyn, if you'll read that one more time, that last section about women having to bear the burdens.
I've already scrolled down a bit, so hang on just a second.
Okay.
Among the more advanced races, women are not so large. That part or the one before?
Well, it was just about how women have carried, quite a bit of the load to leave men's hands
free.
Oh,
women has always had to work, at least right up to modern times. The female has been a real producer. Man has usually chosen the easier path, and this inequality has existed throughout the entire history of the human race. Woman has always been the burden bearer, carrying the family property and tending the children, thus leaving the man's hands free for fighting and hunting.
Yeah.
And it goes on to say that women's first liberation came when men consented to till the soil, consented to do what had theretofore been regarded as women's work. It was a great step forward when male captives were no longer killed, but were enslaved as agriculturists. This brought about the liberation of women so she could devote more time to homemaking and child culture. Then it goes on later on to say, decreasing primitive warfare generally lessened the disparity between the division of labor based on sex. But women still had to do the real work while men did picket duty. No camp or village could be left unguarded day or night. But even this task was alleviated by the domestication of the dog.
Mm.
In general, the coming of agriculture has enhanced women's prestige and social standing. At least this was true up until the time man himself turned agriculturalist. And as soon as man addressed himself to the tilling of the soil, there immediately ensued great improvement in the methods of agriculture, extending on down through successive generations. Men do really like to problem solve, don't they? They
don't
do
they?
Like to find more efficient and effective ways of doing things.
And here's our hats off to you, men, fathers, men, beautiful creatures that you are. Love you so much. Am endlessly intrigued by you. Love that you're problem solvers. Love that you offer strength and protection to your families. Love that you're willing to go lay your life down for the greater good. Man, I just love you so much, all you wonderful men out there. And thank you for all you do to keep moms and children safe. You know, we really couldn't do it without you. And sometimes we have to, and it's not a happy thing to have to do it alone. And Lee, I know you've had to do a lot yourself, and you've had to be a single parent and a single mom, and that's quite a struggle, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it really, you know, my experience of it is it can't be done well. It's just too much. And so, you know, it's the ideal is, you know, it, just as in the book, is that you have two parents to raise a child, because because each brings something important to the parenting. So, you know, you do the best you can, but I mean, and you, and of course God always takes up the slack, but sometimes that slack isn't taken up, you know, in as timely a fashion as we would wish. So, but at least, you know, in the eternal picture, it's like, you know, what didn't happen that needed to happen can still happen, and that's huge.
Right.
So,
isn't it really comforting to know that?
Yeah. Oh, it would. I think it would be impossible, really. I don't know how anybody can stand to live, really, without understanding the big picture. Because it's like, oh my goodness, there's just. I don't know how they. You know, it's the big picture gives meaning to everything, in my opinion. So.
Right.
Yeah. I always take notes, and because I just like to, and I can remember things better that way. So I've been taking notes ever. Since the beginning of your show. And so I hope you don't mind. I had like several things I wanted to kind of tick off, if that's okay.
Oh, well, please do.
Okay. Well, one thing is, when you were speaking earlier about how Mother Spirit, or the Mother, Creative Mother, subordinates herself to the Creator Son, I was just reflecting on, yeah, but that is true. But the other thing that is true is that He who is the you know, greatest is the servant. And so she really subordinates herself to someone whose ultimate desire is to serve. And so it's not like the earth version of subordination, which is you take a step back and keep your place, you know.
Dominance, sort of.
Yeah, dominance. It's like it is yielding to someone who then really puts him or herself under you to serve you, so to speak. So it's a very elevated form of yielding.
Thank you for
indeed.
That.
Indeed.
Wow. Great insight. Absolutely. And that's what I meant when I said he has to earn it. And he earns it through service, right? That's such a great point.
Yeah. And that's really, of course, important to me as a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've had plenty of men, like in churches, but even among the readership, quote, you know, those ideas to me. And it's always really rankled me. And so, anyway, because it doesn't, you know, feel good. It doesn't feel good unless you understand the basis of that subordination.
And it goes back to what Krista said about what women maybe are bringing to the forefront now is, hey, how it feels matters.
Oh, yeah, that was another point I was going to comment on, which is the feeling, you know, you talked earlier about how Mother holds the space of the universe and that mothers often teach boundaries as a result. And I thought, well, of course, because if Mother ever exceeded her boundaries, she'd be outside of our universe. So she models boundaries.
And yeah, then, she is boundaries.
She is boundaries. And then because she models holding space, we are embodied as, you know, as spirit beings. We're embodied, and feelings happen in the body. That's where they happen. They're chemical cascade that happens in the body. So obviously, Mother's going to care about anything that's in the body or about the body, because she's, you know, she embodies us and breathes life
into
us.
She is the body.
Yes, she is the body.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And just
that
as
makes a lot of sense. That really does.
Awesome.
And as a very slight digression, I don't want to get snagged on it because I could. that's why it really troubled me so much on the society administration list when there was opposition to a discussion of proper nutrition. And instead the comment was made that we should be discussing more elevated things like David's totally wonderful, awesome project of, you know, with Jesus' original.
Joshua ben Joseph.
Yeah, Joshua ben Joseph, yes. And I thought, oh, I'm all for David's project, but it's not an either-or thing because Mother's about embodiment, and this list is supposed to be about both, you know, male and female aspects of God, and not just the male aspect of God. And so
it interesting how some people were really uncomfortable with the person who brought that forward was being very motherly at that point in time? I mean, I was like, wow, there's a mother. The mother is coming through to say, kids, take care of your body. Watch what you eat. That was such a mother thing to do. And some people felt very uncomfortable with that. But again, it's about boundaries. And what, you know, the Arantia book tells us that the earmark of the rebellion is unbridled self-liberty. Unbridled is about boundaries. You got to have boundaries.
Yes.
You
yes.
got to set boundaries, and they're healthy. And so.
Well, my one thought on that was, wow, there's still a little bit of male chauvinism even on the list. Inadvertent, I'm sure. I'm positive
yes,
it's inadvertent.
Of course.
But it was saddening to me because it was like, gee, Mani, you know, look what our book says. Anyway, that's why I said I could get cider. More importantly, though, I wanted to pick up on the comment that Kathy made earlier about Chris's comment about if you want growth, pray to mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I listened to that same podcast, and in that context, Chris said a couple of other things that really stayed with me. One is, he said, as we sort of develop an awareness of God, God at first is like a very bright and brilliant light that's so bright it's almost blinding. And he said for a long time we can stay sort of in the thrall of the blinding light of God. But he said after a while, if you're paying attention, you'll ask yourself, hey, wait a minute, what is holding me up while I'm blinded by this light? And he said, that's when you discover Mother Spirit is holding you up while you are entertaining the idea of this light and trying to go forward towards it. And that was, and he said, and as a matter of fact, this really stayed with me too. He said, you know, our goal is to fuse with our adjuster, but that takes a number of mansion worlds for most of us. And he said, from now all the way up through all those mansion worlds on the way to fusion, it's Mother who grows us up. It is Mother. Mother grows us up so we can finally fuse with the adjuster, and then Father can take over. So I thought, when he said that, I thought, oh, that must be like on Earth. We're under Mother's care until about age 6, and then we get our thought adjuster, you know. So we must
beautiful?
Be like 0 to 6 up until the time we fuse, and Mother's growing us.
I love when we find patterns like that. It's just so meaningful to me. I mean,
yeah.
One that I've identified is the sperm and the ovum. You know, in that very same pattern, we are like the ovum, which is Mother, right? And
yes.
then the Father enters us, which is like the sperm, and that creates a whole new creature, which is our evolving immortal soul. So there's the pattern again.
Oh, yeah.
Father
yeah, exactly.
is that super potency, that super additive that adds something to the existing space that creates an explosion of something new.
Yeah.
And there it is again, our soul.
Yes. And yeah, so anyway, the idea that mother is like my main deal, you know, from now until several Moranchan incarnations. It's like, thank you, Mother. You know,
thank you, Mother. You're holding me up.
Yes, and growing
so
me up.
Awesome.
Yeah, holding
yeah,
me up.
Yeah, growing me up.
Mm-hmm.
Growing me up. Beautiful. Thanks again to Chris. And the show you guys are talking about is Symmetry of Soul, which can be heard on Tuesday nights live or listened to on podcasts right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Exactly.
Indeed.
Yeah, thank
it's
you.
It's just
thank
a
you.
Wonderful study group that goes on Tuesday
yeah.
nights. And
for
if,
people
if,
who don't get to.
Yeah, for people who don't have a study group in their area, or if they're housebound or can't get out to study group, it's just been a wonderful service. Unfortunately
yeah.
for us, it happens on the same night as our local study group, one of our local study groups, so we don't always get to listen in. But
well, we can't listen live, but it is in the archives. And
wonderfully,
you can go back
it
and
is
to
on the archives,
yeah.
indeed.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
and it's a good, even if you do get to go to a live group, I think it's a really good, you know, it adds to the experience.
Addition, yeah. Right.
There
well, and
go.
One of the things that's so amazing to me is really is how different every study group is, regardless of how much access you have to study groups in your area. You know, we're fortunate in that we have several,
yeah.
but
yeah.
each one
including
has
Chris
a completely right. Each
when
one
Kathy,
has a completely different flavor.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I laughed when Kathy said that the way Chris teaches is over her head, and she's a new reader. And I thought, shoot, I've been reading for like centuries, and it's still over my head.
Yes, he has that definite scientific understanding, which is invaluable. And, of course, he has studied it diligently for so long. And I think the other thing about Chris, he has taken on the teacher role. And, again, the Course in Miracles says, if you would know something, teach it to learn it. And I think he embodies that. He wants to teach it, and so he has learned it so well. And many of his insights come from just knowing the material and contemplating it in order to teach it. You know, he's really taken that on in earnest. And he comes from teachers. Chris has teaching in his blood. So
both of his parents.
Yeah, it makes him very effective. Can we take another caller? I invite you to stay on with us, Lee.
Oh, I'll just say thank you and goodbye and happy Mother's Day. That's all. Thank you.
Happy Mother's Day to you,
thank
too.
Thank you so much
it's
for calling
so great
in.
To hear your voice.
Love you both. Okay, bye.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
So area code 705, you are with us on this Mother's Day tribute.
Hi, it's Krista again.
Hi, Krista again.
Welcome back.
I just thought that since we're on this topic of you know, mother, father, and perhaps extending to male, female, and the whole polarity, there's this other thought I wanted to run by you that I've been developing for at least a decade. But, you know, the idea of the divine, of the betrothal, you know, the thought adjuster and our human person, right? That's the betrothal arrangement to be, you know, a wed, you know, at fusion. And it strikes me that the central power of the person is the will, right? I mean, that's I don't know. That's what I get from the Urantia book, and that's the kind of the power is the will, and the thought adjuster, of course, is pre-will, doesn't have the will. So the mortal has the will. Now, to me, like, will means, you know, the power of desire, you know, the passion, and the kind of movement, the power, the momentum that makes us go forward, you know, open up space for experience and for life. And I guess the ideal is, you know, when we fuse, that the spirit or that the will becomes completely, you know, dedicated to the spirit. But in the meantime, it's mistrusted. I think, like, all religions in the past have mistrusted it, and some more than others, and some still do. They distrust the power of the will, and they keep women down. Like, women's desire is a very dangerous thing. You know, it's something to be suppressed at all costs, you know, because it's a kind of a dynamic freedom that can only be controlled through force, really. But in a more advanced civilization, it would be like a voluntary thing, you know, that the will voluntarily devotes itself to the highest and the best way, you know, so that Jesus, you know, before he was crucified, he didn't really want to be crucified, right? You know, who would? You know, he was kind of hoping that maybe, you know, he wouldn't have to go through it. But deep in his heart, like, his will was so consecrated to Father that his deepest will actually did, you know, want that, to embrace that because of the Father. But, you know, that was a will that was voluntarily consecrated, you know? Like,
and
the Father wasn't forcing
him
to do that.
You have touched on a concept that is so central to the Urantia book, it's almost hard to you know, extract it, and that is this idea of the sovereignty of will.
Mm-hmm. And the will,
you know,
is mother power. It doesn't say that in the Urantia book, but I've kind of made my own extrapolation. To me, will is mother power.
That's
the will in creation, at least.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, this idea that it has to be suppressed in women, I think, is so. And oftentimes it has to be suppressed, and I'm not meaning to pick on any one culture, but we certainly see it in the Middle East, where women have to wear burqas and hide themselves because of the response that they draw out of men just by being.
Yeah, women's sexuality is a very, very, you know, dangerous thing. And also their wills.
And I think that is a really important distinction to make, is that, and one sometimes that I think it's difficult for women to understand is just how much power they have over men's feelings. That part of man that he might be most uncomfortable about
because he doesn't have any control over it.
Yeah, and you see, so it's a thing that will is something that both men and women have, and it's been pretty almost suppressed equally in some ways in men and in women, you know, because you have to, because of how we've been made subservient to the kings and the rulers and the churches and the popes and the priests and the teachers, and, you know, everybody has had to have their will just stamped on, you know, in the name of authority, you know, secular authority. So mm-hmm. there's that too, you know, will is a dangerous thing to rulers, you know, of all kinds.
And if religion teaches, or if we've grown up in a culture that teaches us that, for example, that sex is evil,
mm-hmm.
that there's a relationship between sexuality and evil, then you can understand why for so many years women were seen as sort of the scourge, or the cause,
the bane
of the cause of evil, because they initiated,
for heaven's sakes.
Well, they initiated this longing or this lust in men, and if they believed that was evil, and
exactly,
and
corporeal.
It had so much power over them that it makes sense.
Because the body is evil, and women are more sort of body, you know, identified, maybe because they reproduce and everything like that.
Mm.
I think that's part of it. And will, and it's another, will is something also, like it's a teacher in the sense that will, like, you can only learn through experience. Like the will can only really learn through experience, right? You sort of follow... You follow your will. It's your ability to choose, you know, between what feels good and what feels bad, or what you go towards, what you run away from, you know, what you're attracted to, what you're repelled by. You can even see it in an amoeba, right? They have this way of moving towards what they want, you know, food, or running away from what's noxious. So, but we have to learn all that, you know, not only on the physical survival plane, but also, you know, what works, like, with other people. You know, we're all pretty... as children, you know, we're all pretty egocentric, and our will is all about getting what I want. But sort of trial and error teaches us that that's the sure road to loneliness. You know, that if that's your strategy for moving through life, just going for what you want.
And the human goal, the goal of humanity, is self-control, right? Jesus threw the gauntlet down. He said it would be better if you could control yourself than a city. So this is about your will, controlling your will. What is it you want? Do we want to destroy something that tempts us, or do we want to master the temptation within ourselves? I think it's the latter, not the former.
Mm-hmm.
We want to master the temptation within ourselves. We can't destroy those things that tempt us, whether they be women or, you know, and Jesus, for instance. You brought up Jesus as a good example, because what did he do? What got him killed? The fact that he empowered people, and because he empowered people, that threatened the powers that be,
mm-hmm.
that wanted to oppress people or oppress the will of people,
mm-hmm.
but Jesus empowered their will and said, you are the children of the living God. Live a courageous life before God.
Yeah.
You can do this without middlemen. You are empowered to do this. God has given you these gifts, and they are yours as much as any man. These things he was saying to people were empowering, and of course, people who want to maintain control over other people don't want them to be empowered.
Oh, very dangerous. Yeah, that's just
very
totally dangerous to them, and it has to be stopped, you know, at all times,
right.
You know, even if you
stamp
have to kill
it
the
out.
Person.
Right. But you can't kill the truth, and you can't kill an idea, and you can't kill humans. You can't stop humans from evolving as long, and just like, you know, we've said, you can't stop the mother from growing us up. We will grow up, because
and I think
our
the thing with the will too is that we have to focus on what we want even more. You know, like we might want to, like in an argument, we might want to win, and we might really want to, but if we realize that alienate, like I just think of all this arguments or discussions I've had with my son, where I really, you know, I want to show him how I think of, you know, what he's just done, like the bad behavior or whatever. And I know that if I cross the line, the consequence is that he withdraws. Like, he's 30 now. I mean, he can decide never to talk to me again, right? If I'm too insistent on what I want. So, like, what I want even more than being right is I want love, you know? So your will, you know, you kind of aim higher, and that demands a whole other protocol, you know, for relating. But it's not that you stamp out your lower self. You know, I think that we have to honor our lower self, but we're going for our higher self. You know, that's what we're growing toward.
And harking back to what Steve McIntosh told us a couple of weeks ago, and that is we transcend and include our lower self.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And
it's always there
important
simultaneously.
Too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we are out of time, ladies.
Okay. My gosh, really.
So much
oh,
fun.
My goodness.
All right. Happy Mother's Day, Mother Spirit.
Happy Mother's Day. Thank you so much for calling, Krista and Kathy.
Thank you.
And
everybody.
Lee.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Beautiful Mother Spirits. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful week.
Okay. You too.
Yeah.
And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And thank you, Universe Mother Spirit. And
thank you,
Paula.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was a blast. You know, I love these shows sometimes where we just do open phones and we get to hear from people. It's really a treat for me. I love what they have to say. So great things come out. So thank you for that wonderful idea, Crystal, and you never cease to amaze me.
Ditto.
Pull a rabbit out of your hat.
And thanks for sharing that beautiful poem at the beginning of the program. That was so, so touching and moving.
You're welcome, darling.
Well, until next time, folks, thanks for joining us with the Cosmic Citizen. And
we'll
same time, same station.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.